Hello and welcome to episode 24 of Investigating the Post Office Scandal, Meet the Ministers. It's Friday the 2nd of December 2022. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I wrote the first investigation into the Post Office Horizon IT scandal for Computer Weekly back in 2009.
Hello, my name is Nick Wallace and I am the author of the book The Great Post Office Scandal, out now in paperback. Just in time for Christmas. Together, Rebecca and I are covering phase two of the Post Office Horizon IT public inquiry, which is being held at the International Dispute Resolution Centre in London.
The Post Office scandal came about because the Post Office rolled out a piece of accounting and retail software called Horizon into every post office and made sub-postmasters legally responsible for its accounting figures. Unfortunately, it didn't work and produced faulty accounts which sub-postmasters were criminally prosecuted over.
Now, this inquiry was set up in 2020 and was made statutory last year after 39 of those sub-postmasters had their convictions quashed. Phase one of the inquiry concerned the human impact on sub-postmasters, and I would very much recommend looking at some of those evidence sessions that have already been published on the inquiry website because they're harrowing. And phase two, which we've just been dealing with, concerned the design and rollout of this Horizon system. Now, before it was actually properly rolled out, the Horizon system was known as Pathway, so we occasionally call it Horizon Pathway, and so do the people giving evidence. And the system was designed, built and operated and maintained by a computer company called Fujitsu on behalf of the Post Office. Before it was swallowed up by Fujitsu, there was a British company called ICL, which actually won the tender to produce Horizon Pathway. So we've started calling them, for purposes of phase two of this inquiry, Fujitsu ICL. So if you, again, hear people giving evidence talking about ICL, they're essentially talking about Fujitsu. And if they say Pathway, they're talking about what became Horizon. So this week we heard from four former secretaries of state, and heard some astounding evidence from the former General Secretary of the Sub-Postmasters Union, the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters. We will come to him in a minute. But Rebecca, you listened in on Tuesday and Wednesday. So what jumped out for you?
So there was a bit of a running theme in the first 2 days this week, which is that in the early-ish days of Horizon, with everything that was going on, it was all very complex, all very political, nobody was really asking about or reporting on or prioritising whether the tech was actually working for sub-postmasters. The first person we heard from this week on Tuesday 29th was Sir Steve Robson, a former civil servant at the Treasury who was only involved for a few months in 1999. And in his words, he drew the short straw. He was brought in to look at the project with a fresh set of eyes and was involved with the decision to take Horizon forward without the benefits payment card. He talked about a few areas, including Tony Blair and the politics with Fujitsu. And when asked, he said that no one was raising any concerns with him from the sub-postmasters relating to Horizon at that stage. We then heard from Alistair Darling, now Lord Darling, the former Secretary of State for Social Security. He largely spoke about why he didn't want Horizon or the benefits payment card, talking about how important it was not to use what he saw as a bug-ridden and delayed IT system for a critically important job such as paying benefits to 15 million people, and describing the project as doomed. Here, counsel to the inquiry Jason Beer is asking why this intolerance for risk wasn't extended to postmasters who are using it for an equally important task of balancing their books every week.
What would you say to the suggestion that that answer sounds as if you were not prepared to tolerate risk to 15 million individuals in receipt of benefits payments, but were prepared to tolerate risk to sub-postmasters who had to administer the system?
There's two different risks here. Let's say 15 million people relying on benefits every week need to get the exact amount they're due and when they're expecting to get it. And I would not take the risk of putting in place a payment card, even if it had worked. And remember, it didn't look like it was ever going to work, knowing that there was every chance this would happen. What would you say to the 15 million people who suddenly found they weren't getting the right amount of money and when they were expecting it? Now, there is clearly a separate risk in relation to a post-office network, which is a slightly different thing. I fully accept that somebody who had bought a business, a post office business, needed to have some certainty. But, there are other ways the government could find to support that network. And indeed, actually, when the benefit payment card came out of it, And, you know, the government pursued a different course of action. You know, that's what it did. But, you know, if you just look at this and, I cannot preempt whatever the inquiry comes up with. Of what I know in public knowledge with the problems with the Horizon programme, it rather suggests to me that, you know, when we make decisions, we need to be as sure as we possibly can be that if we're putting computer systems in place that they actually work. And the way things were with the benefit payment card at this stage, I could not be certain of that.
Lord Darling doesn't quite answer the question that I think Jason Beer was asking here. And overall, his evidence gave the impression that he was really looking out for benefits claimants. He had their best interests at heart and he had to fight quite hard to avoid using a system that he thought, correctly as it turned out, would make a lot of people's lives very difficult. And this week's evidence shows on several levels that no one was really doing the same thing for Sir Postmasters. And there were a lot of people who, as Alistair Darling alludes to in that last segment, thought that they were defending the interests of postmasters in that automation was seen as necessary for the survival of the post office. But it became increasingly clear this week that in so vociferously defending the commercial interests of the postmasters, everyone forgot or ignored or just didn't bother to worry about the fact that no one makes a profit if your accounting IT is broken. And this is a point that was underlined a few times by Tony Kearns, who is was the Senior Deputy General Secretary at the Communication Workers Union, who gave evidence straight after Lord Darling. He explained a little bit more about why the CWU did want Horizon and how that had the effect of narrowing people's focus.
We wanted it. I'm not saying we didn't want it, but we wanted it because, you know, there was a real, one of its very fight for the future of the post office. Because if, I mean, the government work, benefit agency work, from memory, I'm talking maybe 50% of the work that was undertaken. If you take out 50% of the work, from a trade union's point of view, it's 50% of the jobs are gone, which is not something we wanted. So, to me, there was a rush to get it done. And once they identified this, my take on it, looking back, it was there was a rush to get it in. I'm not saying people didn't try and resolve problems. There was a rush to get it in. And they'd decided that this was the system from whatever beauty parade that they'd undertook to identify the provider. And once they decided on this system, that was it. All roads led to Rome, and that was the road they were going down.
That was Tony Kearns. This is a theme that was really doubled down on during Colin Baker's evidence on Wednesday. Baker is the former General Secretary of the National Federation for Sir Postmasters, and Nick, you had a lot of opinions about this, didn't you?
I did, yes. I watched the evidence live and I put my opinions on Twitter.
So we'll get to your views very shortly. So Colin Baker talked early in his evidence about feeling a big responsibility to help the post office evolve and survive, and talked about it being his life's work. But the barristers suggested on Wednesday that this laser focus on keeping the network alive led to a potential misjudgment in how he dealt with Sir Postmaster's problems relating to Horizon, which of course he was fully aware of in the late 90s and early 2000s. Throughout his evidence, he gave glimpses of where this misjudgment was coming from. So firstly, he accepted the post office's assurances over and over that the IT was either working fine or that bugs were being resolved. He continued to try to deal with the issues internally instead of going public, and he told postmasters not to complain publicly. He also seemed to be quite critical of the press, describing articles on Horizon's problems at the time as scaremongering and even as nasty, and that's not an opinion he appears to have left behind.
Which is odd, because it didn't sound like the articles he was referring to were scaremongering or nasty. They were reporting on real issues with Horizon, which he was trying to get solved. And also trying to keep from the media himself.
Yeah, which is confusing. And this is another person in this case with an apparently irrational dislike of the press, which is doubly odd because the press, while it's obviously far from perfect, as far as I'm aware, has only ever reported on anything relating to this scandal in good faith and with accuracy.
Yes, although in the main we are scurrilous chances, of course.
Yes, obviously. However, Baker didn't want to rock the boat with the post office or with the government. He talked of his dilemma of wanting the public to think Horizon was fine and really wanting it to go ahead, while also working behind the scenes to pressurise the post office to fix those bugs. But he didn't seem to acknowledge the possibility that perhaps those bugs weren't fixable, despite what the post office was saying, and that postmasters were being forced into an impossible position. So overall, it felt as though Baker wanted to impress on us how hard he'd fought to keep postmasters in business via automation, which did come across. But there was also something a bit troubling about some of his evidence.
Yeah, there was. I mean, quite simply, Mr. Baker was so committed to the Horizon project, he seemed prepared to get it at any cost, even if that eventual cost was the false prosecution of dozens, if not hundreds, of his own members. Now, he did lie to his membership, or as he says, overstated his position when he told them that the NFSP would stop the rollout of Horizon if it didn't work, when he frankly had no such powers to do so, and he knew it. He also tried to stop his members from publicly speaking out about problems with Horizon on the basis that it was essential for the future survival of the post office network. And as we've been talking about, he admitted he did what he could to stop the public from knowing the truth about Horizon. Now, on top of this, and I think this was crucial when I was watching his evidence, he knew what the post office investigators were doing after Horizon was rolled out, which was holding sub-postmasters responsible for holes in their accounts. And yet all he did was complain internally to the post office. So he knew Horizon was a shaky system. He was getting that information all the time. He knew sub-postmasters were being prosecuted on data produced by this shaky system. And he just failed to protect them. And when he was challenged on this point by sub-postmaster representatives to the inquiry, I think it's fair to say he came across as both rude and dismissive. This is how he dealt with the barrister Flora Page.
I'm proud of the results of the negotiations that we carried out through all that period. Not every post office is automated now, but every single counter position in every post office, at no cost to the sub-postmasters, no cost to our members. So I don't know how you measure success, but I think that was a successful period. Now, yet, in part, there were sub-postmasters that wanted to nibble at my ankles. That's a fair game. I always said the tallest tree gets most of the wind, and I got a fair bit of it.
The point is, isn't it, that you achieved your goal of automating the post office, but alongside that, we know that between 2000 and 2014, 736 sub-postmasters were prosecuted on the basis of Horizon evidence, or at least 736, that's a figure that has been put about. What did your organisation do to join the dots and recognise this unlikely crime wave was actually a result of implementing Horizon?
When I was General Secretary of the organisation, we were consistently beating a path to the post office's door, consistently, and including up to and including the counter losses. But I've said before, it was a slow roll, these Horizon losses. And I retired in 2007, so I can't say anything about what happened after then. Forgive me. But I think we did our absolute utmost. I don't know how many of the 700 or so were pre-2007 or post-2007. I've not seen that information. I don't know whether all or any were members of the Federation. I don't know whether all or any actually referred it to the Federation. So it's not a question that I would attempt to answer, and I would venture to suggest it's not a question you should attempt to ask.
So that's Colin Baker being questioned by Flora Page. And you have to ask, what sort of person fails to keep a tally of how many of his organisation's members are being criminally prosecuted? And then what sort of person can't be bothered to find out 2 decades later from easily available public information when they know they're going to be called before a public inquiry? And what sort of person tells a barrister trying to find out how innocent people went to jail that she shouldn't be asking him questions about his failure to do something which might have curtailed or stopped it? Now, sorry, I'm ranting a bit, but since his evidence, Flora Page has indicated that she's going to be returning to this when Baker is recalled at a later stage of the inquiry. And I am sorry if it does seem over the top in my criticism of the NFSP. I take the point that it wasn't the NFSP that was falsely prosecuting sub-postmasters. It was the post office. But I've thought this all along, and Mr. Baker's evidence has made it absolutely clear to me that the NFSP patently could have done much more. And Mr. Baker's attitude 22 years later is to tell an inquiry it shouldn't be asking him basic questions about it.
Yeah, that bit was confusing.
I also ought to add that the current chief executive of the NFSP was sitting in the inquiry room when Colin Baker was saying what he was saying. And so I emailed him to ask him exactly what he made of the way that Colin Baker behaved and what he said. I have yet to get a response.
OK, let's have a look at the rest of the ministers who gave evidence this week. So first of all, a quick look at Sir Ian McCartney, former Minister of State at Department of Trade and Industry. He made an interesting point about how the government had underinvested in the post office and its leadership for a very long time, calling the post office a bit of a cash cow for the Treasury.
What was your view of their leadership?
Maybe unambitious, and I don't want to be unfair. I mean, I find these people were hard-working and wanted to do the best by people, but I mean, the leadership of it also stems from the board and the boards that preceded them. And so there also lies because of this, because of governments prior to us coming in and subsequent. The post office was sat upon and used as a cash cow by the Treasury over 20 years or more, I think, where when they were making profits, a lot of that was just profits which were taken by the Treasury and recirculated. But none of it recirculated back to the post office for investing in the future. And so being seen as a cash cow, it's suddenly because of what's happening in new technology, it's no longer a cash cow. It's got to be having cash given to it in huge amounts over a long period of time. And so I do think it this affected the management and their attitude, that even if they brought forward new ideas, it would depend on a political decision by government ministers.
That was Sir Ian McCartney.
Then we heard from Alan Johnson, a former postie who became General Secretary of the Communications Workers Union and who rose to eventually become Home Secretary. Whilst Horizon was being prepared for rollout, he was Postal Affairs Minister and chaired a working group which brought all the interested parties together to thrash out problems with the system, including the unions. Now, he told the Inquiry's Jason Beer he wasn't told about the seriousness of the Horizon problems or the subsequent prosecution of sub-postmasters using Horizon evidence.
There were no alarm bells ringing that this might be a huge problem with this. Certainly not that it ought to be replaced or that we were building up problems in the future. Issues were raised. They were raised with the post office. They raised them with ICL. We got a thumbs up that those were resolved. Rollout carried on.
And you were getting as your main source of information here your information from the unions, is that right?
The only way I could get it, I guess, unless, you know, I went round to sub-post offices and talked to the sub-postmasters themselves. Yeah, it was that's why the Joint Working Party was more crucial for NFSP, for us to listen to the NFSP than any other of the, with all due respect, the other unions, except there were other forums for the other unions to make their views known.
And so if a red flag was to be raised or an alarm was to be pressed, it was for the NFSP to do so at these meetings?
Yes.
Was any consideration in the meetings given to what was happening to the sub-postmasters on the ground in terms of balancing problems, given that they had a contractual obligation to make good shortfalls, and whether they should be given the benefit of the doubt when any shortfalls arose?
The issue never arose. I don't remember that being raised at any working group meeting that I chaired.
Were you aware in, or was there any discussion in the working groups that you chaired about what should happen to sub-postmasters in terms of investigation, suspension and prosecution of them where Horizon showed a shortfall?
No.
The Inquiry's received evidence from one sub-postmistress, Pamela Locke, that she began to see shortfalls on the Horizon system in January 2000. She took some money from her own ISA to put money into the system, £5,000 I recollect, in order to make it balance. But the shortfalls continued. She's told the chairman that she was phoning the helpline 2 to 3 times a week about the shortfalls. They provided no help. That in July 2000, auditors came to her branch and found a shortfall of £26,000. They asked her where the money had gone, and she said that it must be in the system, it must be the paperwork, because she didn't have the £26,000. The auditors closed her branch. They took away the keys. She'd been a sub-postmistress for 25 years. She was interviewed and then taken through the criminal justice system by the post office. Did you know that any of that was going on?
No.
Whilst the Horizon Working Group was meeting?
No.
And overseeing and actively managing the rollout of the system?
No.
If you had known about the conduct of Post Office Counters Limited to Miss Locke or people like her, what would your view have been?
One of disgust.
And why?
That she should be treated in that way. This was a new system, so you're saying this happened in July 2000?
Well, the first shortfall she noticed was in January 2000.
January 2000. So you...
And the auditors arrived in July 2000.
It's crazy. That should have been something we knew about. If it was connected, as it seems very much to be connected, with the software, that's precisely what the Joint Working Party, what the Horizon Working Group was there to hear, those kind of issues. That in particular, I mean, would have been set alarm bells going with anyone remotely concerned with the trade union world. And employment relations, and who, as I did, understood some of the kind of overreactions you sometimes got from what we used to call the Post Office Investigation Division.
Why did you sometimes get overreactions from what was then called the Post Office Investigations Division?
I bore you with the strikes I've had to deal with. So when we worked on the sorting office floor, we worked under two-way mirrors where we were watched all the time by people from the investigation department. And sometimes they would come and arrest people standing on the sorting office floor for all kinds of things. One guy looked at a travel brochure that was going to a country he was going on holiday to, and as he was standing at what used to be called a packet frame, manually sorting this, he just for a second took it out to look at it, was arrested and taken to prison. He was a war hero, by the way. Happened in Preston, big national strike. It spread right across the northwest. So, you know, I wasn't a stranger to the kind of strong-arm tactics that was sometimes used by POID. Now, counters people were in a completely different situation. The postmistress that you describe, it's her livelihood, her home, probably. And as I say at the beginning of my report, the reputation of the post office was largely there because of sub-postmasters and sub-postmistresses being valued in their communities. So the effect this would have had, this would have set all kinds of alarm bells going.
Against the background that you describe, was any thought given by the working group to what should we do in the interim? We've got these problems being reported to us with the system. There's not only an imperative to solve them, but we need to look after our people whilst those problems are solved, and that they're not, for example, hauled over the coals, not criminally investigated, when there might be a different explanation for the shortfalls.
I would have thought that would have been specifically outlawed during a period when people were getting used to the new system. That wasn't right. So the point that you raised, the issue you raised about that sub-postmistress, didn't come up at any meetings, didn't come up at the NFSP conference, which was in May of that year. Nobody came to me with that. Nobody put the kind of red flag up that should have been put up about what happened to that woman, because it was obviously a precursor of what was to come.
I should say that 20 years later, Miss Locke did have her conviction overturned.
That's good.
That was Alan Johnson talking to Jason Beer. Now, Johnson was taken to a list of complaints made during the early testing of Horizon by Jason Beer, and he said he simply was just not getting this information. And had he known that sub-postmasters were being prosecuted using Horizon evidence, he would have brought it to a halt immediately.
A number of sub-postmasters and their representatives made complaints. One said rollout fell short of an automated system. Nothing had changed since the live trial. He had been instructed to go back to manually listing pension and allowance dockets. Another said that in his area, 17 out of 44 post offices received no support whatsoever and they'd had to serve customers manually. Another said it was impossible to get through to the helpline and trainers had no idea how to run a post office. Another said elderly sub-postmasters couldn't make the system work and were retiring. Others complained of balancing problems. Another said that there were thousands of error notices in his area. Another said that a trainer had confessed to him that he didn't know how to balance the system. Can you remember at the time whether, as the minister, you became aware of those problems reported to the National Conference?
I expected in a question and answer session when the government minister is there for representatives of the National Federation to express their concerns. I didn't expect anyone to come to the microphone saying you're doing a great job and all of that. Of course, it was the forum for them to do it, to do that. Why would they not use that opportunity? But I tell you, if anyone had come and said, relayed the story that you relayed about what happened to that poor woman, that would have been cause enough to immediately go to the post office, immediately say, this system, you cannot do this. This is not the way to treat sub-postmasters. I don't understand why that was happening. And no one was reporting it at the conference and no one was reporting it to me.
So Alan Johnson there. We heard from another Alan, Alan Milburn, former Chief Secretary to the Treasury. Mr Milburn gave a neat summary of the origins of this disaster.
Look, there were clear structural problems from the outset with this. The government of which I was a member inherited what was a failing contract. And maybe the way it was set up from the outset, it could be argued, it was designed almost to fail, given that there were different objectives on the part of the principal sponsors, the benefits agency, DSS on the one side, DTI and the post office on the other. There was huge ambiguity there. However, and, of course, the programme delivery authority and all of the issues that ICL Fujitsu raise about continual chopping and changing and so on and so forth. It does take two to tango, however. And there was also another pattern through all of this, I think, which is that ICL had signed up to something that they were unable to deliver. And I think when I look at it today, it's pretty clear that the complexity of the contract was dramatically underestimated. The timescales were heroic. And to put it politely, the management and governance structures were deeply ambiguous. But the job of the contractor, particularly in a PFI deal, is to take that responsibility and absorb those risks. That's the point about PFI. It's about the transferal of risk. So all the parties bear some responsibility.
And finally, we heard from Sir Geoff Mulgan, a special advisor to Tony Blair, whose job it was to try and help find a way through what in 1998, 1999 seemed to be a failing IT project. I thought he was very interesting because he essentially confirmed that the Prime Minister thought cancellation of the Horizon project was politically untenable, even if it was obvious it had very serious problems.
I did say to him I thought there was probably a problem with the technology which needed to be addressed. I probably discussed at several points what was happening with Jeremy Hayward, who was then running his office, and there was a fairly clear message that the option of cancellation was not really on the table politically.
Who was that message coming from?
Well, this was, I think, Jeremy Hayward trying to reflect his understanding of the positions of different ministers and departments and the instincts of the Prime Minister. And therefore, the risk of actually going back to first principles and analysing the technology was you might get another 6 months or years delay and a further complication of already complex situation.
Okay, that was Sir Geoff Mulgan, special advisor to Tony Blair, confirming what has basically come out across the course of this inquiry, that there was a huge amount of political pressure for Horizon to be rolled out when it was rolled out, despite the fact it clearly wasn't ready. And so we have come to an end of phase two of this inquiry. I will say, Rebecca, that I have found it quite dull at times. I mean, I appreciate it's necessary, but there were times when we were right in the weeds in terms of basically working out structures of governance and reporting lines, which wasn't that thrilling. But there were some highlights. Yeah. What stuck out for you?
Well, I guess overall, obviously I was hanging on every word. But I guess overall, I mean, I did find it fascinating, like that sort of that slowly unfolding picture of what the hell went on in these early days.
It's like a frame by frame car crash, isn't it?
You watch
how it's building up. You can see the inevitable disaster happening. And then, yeah, you just get the layers and layers and layers of it as you sort of barrel towards this horrible moment where it's rolled out and then people start getting prosecuted.
Yeah, I think the inquiry did such a good job at sort of building that picture up. I mean, they well and truly established that the tech was rubbish. And so for me, I guess the next big question that it would be really interesting to see them answer is how on earth were people being prosecuted using this software? In his closing statement, Sam Steen asked quite an interesting question about premeditation relating to the post office in terms of making sure the sub-postmasters didn't have a paper record and so couldn't check if Horizon data was correct. They couldn't argue against it. And so I guess for me, like, that's next. As Mr. Steen was asking, he was saying, was it cook up or cock up? So was it all mistakes and bad practice, or will we start to see something more sinister emerging?
I mean, that was certainly an interesting take. The idea that, I mean, we know now that the transferal of risk onto sub-postmasters, who were effectively a third or fourth business to the party, who had no contractual say in the way that the Horizon was designed or rolled out or implemented. But the idea that there may have been decisions taken far earlier to stitch up the sub-postmasters before it became apparent in 2013 what had been going on is an interesting thing to posit. In terms of the witnesses who gave evidence for me, obviously I was flabbergasted by what Colin Baker had to say earlier this week. I thought Jeremy Folks, the post office assurance manager, who basically said that Fujitsu had created a black box with Horizon that they were contractually unable to properly test, was really, really troubling. And obviously what Dave McDonnell had to say about the fact that the code was appalling. He told his bosses the code was appalling and would never work and was overruled and eventually moved sideways. I'm just trying to think from amongst the whether we got any clear admissions from ministers. I suppose one of the things that's been raised to me by a couple of people who know about these things was this extraordinary situation in Japan, where you had senior executives from Fujitsu in Japan effectively leaning on the British Prime Minister and the British government to ensure that they didn't can the project, and threatening them with this considerable loss of face that they would suffer as a credible government to its peers in Western Europe and the like. And to what extent that's actually true will, I assume, be unpicked, or may already been a conclusion that Sir Wynne will come to in his final report. But whether it is right that the British government bowed to this lobbying from an overseas company which was pouring millions of pounds into Great Britain PLC at the time will be really, really interesting to see whether or not it was given undue influence, because, of course, the results were that Fujitsu were allowed to sell a shonky system to the government and the sub-postmasters suffered. But it wasn't Fujitsu that were doing the prosecuting, which is something that we always have to come back to.
Okay, well, thank you so much for listening to our coverage of phase two of the public inquiry. Don't forget to like, subscribe and follow so you get every new episode for free as soon as it drops.
Yes, there will be many more episodes of investigating the post office scandal as, of course, we move into phase three of the inquiry. And, of course, we'll obviously bring you a report on what happens next week at the special compensation hearing, again at the IDRC in central London. I think both of us are going to go along to that because there might be something of a demo. So hopefully some media interest in it. This podcast is entirely funded, though, by your crowdfunding donations. Again, we're very grateful for that. If you would like to chuck us a few quid, you will be helping us make this going forward. And you will also automatically be signed up to the Post Office Scandal secret email, which collates everything going on in the inquiry and the wider scandal, with links to all the articles that the likes of Carl Flinders are writing for Computer Weekly and what the BBC is doing, etc. And also I will pull together what interesting gossip I can find as well and stick that in there. If you want to sign up, then all you have to do is go to postofficescandal.uk/donate. You all right? Sound like you've just been shot.
I have no idea what that was.
Okay, fine. I will say that web address again without a bang. Oh, is it your cat, is it, right? postofficescandal.uk/donate, and you will be automatically signed up. Investigating the Post Office Scandal is produced and presented by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace, with sage advice and support from Whistledown Productions.
We'll be back next week with another episode on the Special Inquiry Compensation Hearing.
And until then, goodbye.
Bye.